This podcast was recorded on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We acknowledge and pay our respect to elders past and present.
Scientists predict the small nation of Kiribati will be one of the world's first countries to disappear as a result of climate change. In the middle of the Central Pacific and spread over 33 coral atolls, Kiribati is home to 105,000 people, living an average 2 metres above sea level. How long will they survive the rising tide?
The Hungry Tide is a 2011 documentary that spotlights the existential threat climate change poses to Kiribati. The film follows Maria Simon, a woman from the remote island of Beru, who travels to the 2009 Copenhagen Climate Summit, all the while juggling family responsibilities. We see up close how climate change impacts those living in the region, and the immense challenge of holding back the rising ocean. In this episode of Seeing Green, we're doing something a little bit different. We're speaking to the director and narrator of The Hungry Tide, so you'll hear his voice in some of the film audio we share. We also speak to someone who lives with the reality of climate change in Kiribati every single day. Linda Wan is a climate change advocate and media producer. Working in part with her late husband, John Anderson, Linda has used video to catalogue the situation in Kiribati and educate others about the impact of climate change in the Pacific. And she actually appears in this documentary. She is part of the delegation who headed to the Copenhagen summit. Linda, it's so great to have you on Seeing Green, joining us all the way from the island of Tarawa. Welcome.
Thank you, Dylan.
And as promised, we're also joined by Australian filmmaker Tom Zubrisky, the director, producer and narrator of The Hungry Tide. Tom has a storied career as a filmmaker spanning more than 30 years. His documentaries tend to explore pertinent social, political and environmental issues, often following a personal storytelling style. Tom, thanks for coming on the podcast. You're actually the first bona fide filmmaker we've spoken to. Welcome.
Oh, I feel honoured. Thanks, Dylan.
And Linda, as mentioned, you're based over in Tarawa, which is host to around half of Kiribati's total population of a bit over 100,000 people. I'm hoping you can transport us for a moment to where you are. What kind of a place is Tarawa? Describe the environment and the nature of daily life.
We have one main road from one end of the island to the other. It is very flat, just around about 3 meters above sea level. We live a subsistence life of fish from the sea and whatever else we can find on land, but it's mostly looking more towards rice and carbohydrates that we can get from the shops. With the population of over half the total population of Kiribati, we certainly experience overcrowding. And with overcrowding, there's also reduced number of available spaces for gardening or even our traditional food crops here on the main island, mainly because there is no space. At the moment, with drought being announced as an emergency for Kiribati, there are a few more issues to contend with. One of them is that our wells are all salty now, especially in our village. I had a beautiful garden once. It's all died. Unfortunately, we're starting to get it going again. You know, we have the same worries like you do in the West, but our concerns are more the day-to-day basis due to what's available or not available and how we can make ends meet.
Yeah. And Tom, you had many films to your name before making The Hungry Tide, which came out in 2011. To my knowledge, you hadn't directly explored an environmental issue before, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. How did this film come about and what led you into this issue, specifically focusing on Kiribati?
Well, I've been following the climate debate for several years, probably from the year 2000 or just after, and became increasingly conscious of the impact on low-lying islands in the Pacific. And I was also very concerned that the media in Australia seemed to be totally ignorant of what was going on.
A few weeks back, I went back to Kiribati to visit my mum who was not well. Life is very difficult. My own father said, Maria, I know that I'm getting old. And I will not be here when this happened. But my heart goes to the young generation and my grandchildren.
She was kind of like leading a double life. There was like a bit of a balance that she had to resolve between her family on the one hand, on the islands, her elderly parents getting rather sick. In fact, her mother died just after I began filming. And her professional life, which is the which was the work of getting ready for the IPCC conference and then carrying on in her work as an advocate for her country. Being in Australia, she also had that crucial role of informing Australians about the situation that Kiribati was in. And that's sort of one way I managed to get her involved in the film, as a way to spread awareness amongst Australians. And also, ironically, it was how I managed to get the film across the line with SBS. They were interested in some Australian angle. They were rather reluctant to film a film just about Kiribati by itself, a documentary. So there were sort of many reasons. But I found Maria's story really, really interesting because that balance that she tried to achieve was actually quite a difficult process. The people on the island really needed her as well, especially her father, who was quite distraught when she left. I think the work she did, certainly the build-up to IPCC and her presentation at the IPCC was quite successful, and so I think that gave her confidence that she was then able to use to fly solo in Cancun a year later.
I actually had the opportunity to go back to my home island where I was born, which is called Peru, and
The film, in many ways, is kind of indicative, I suppose, of your work in following the story of particular individuals to shine a light, I guess, on a broader issue. It sort of primarily follows Maria Simon, but Linda, you appear prominently in the film as well, and we kind of get to know different characters. When watching the film, Linda, I mean, you produce your own media content to spread the word about the impact of climate change and sea level rise in Kiribati as well, and you talk to Maria Simon in the film The Hungry Tide about the importance of, I suppose, connecting with people emotionally, telling stories from the community as you're preparing to go over to Copenhagen to push for broader action on climate change mitigation and the like. I wonder if you can speak to that, the importance of telling your stories and the stories of the people in your community to help spread the word about just how much of an issue it is for you presently.
Raising awareness on the issue of climate change and sea level rise is very important for Kiribati. We don't have anywhere else to go. We need to get the world to take note, because what was going to happen to us, being the forefront of it all, will happen to other countries and other communities as well. The other thing is, while we were trying to do this, there were a lot of deniers who don't just deny and keep quiet about it. Like us, they were making their views and ideas known, and were being quite disruptive to the campaign. However, we persisted on. We had everything to lose. They only had words, I suppose, to record for what they have been saying about denying the issue. One of the things that we do very well here, and especially as we are addressing from a national point of view and a national issue, we do it best when we do it with our culture. So while we raise awareness, we talk about the heritage that we may be losing, the identity. And going with those descriptions were also those identities being played out in full. For us, it made it more real that they're not just talking heads, that they are people like you and I, sharing our concerns that we don't actually cause, but are being impacted by it. The ideas with raising awareness is to get buy-ins from nations who were and continue to be major contributors to climate change and sea level rise.
Linda and her partner John Anderson are making an official DVD for the conference. It's one of scores of sponsored videos they've made, educating local people and taking the images of Kiribati to the world.
The frigate is one of our key national icons, the national bird of Kiribati. The story tells of a bird flying the ocean in search of food for its young. On her return, she finds that her homeland has disappeared beneath the waves. This prophecy from the past reminds us of the uncertain future we face as a country and as a people.
In the film too, and again, this came out in 2011, so you know, just over 11 years ago, you expressed some level of frustration with the fact that despite all these efforts to tell your story, you're not always heard as well as you should be. And you say in the film, The Hungry Tide, it doesn't matter if we show them the effects and impact through video, through our songs, in our slides and presentations. The people that we are talking to are dumb, they are deaf, and they are blind. They don't understand a syllable of what we've been saying. Now, I'm sure there's positive stories to tell as part of this as well, but I wonder if you can talk about, from your perspective, just sort of how your stories have been received from people that you've shown them to.
In the early days, it was mostly negative. Now we're starting to, or I'm starting to get people inquiring about, you know, what you said in those days really are happening. How can we contribute, and so forth. One of the things that I suppose was difficult was 10 years or 20 years thereafter, when most of the damage had been caused. They are starting to realize and acknowledge that there is such a thing as climate change. It's not just Kiribati that is feeling all the impact of it, but a lot of our other regional countries as well in the Pacific, as well as those abroad. It's not a very clear answer because we get the negatives at the beginning of it. And then now we're starting to get the hits, you know, people nodding their heads and saying, yes, it's actually true. When I was on the film with Tom, it was different because while I was working with our unit, I was mostly behind the camera rather than in front of it. I had to take a mind shift and share the frustrations I had on camera rather than just being the voice behind all the action. Thank you, Tom. It was a great time to share those and have them recorded. And thank you. You have done a great job on the production, and it's still being used today.
Oh, that's good. Very pleased. Thank you, Linda.
And speaking of being behind the camera, Tom, I mean, you mentioned that you did a lot of the sort of filming and production of this film yourself. In terms of the visual elements, we see quite a few shots from outside an aeroplane window, for example, as the plane's kind of descending to Kiribati. There's, you know, a lot of footage of the ocean and waves kind of crashing over seawalls and the like. How did you approach the actual filming and what did you want to convey in the way that this film is shot?
Well, I didn't actually do all the filming by myself. I had a cinematographer on the very first trip where I accompanied Maria to Beru and later went to Tarawa. And that was the time before drones. So you had to, the only way you can get an aerial is to actually be on a plane, you know. You know, we were lucky enough to kind of cruise around Tarawa and you know, she kind of had a camera there. So, you know, we could see the extent of the island, etc. Same with Beru. The thing that I was conscious of is to not just have pretty pictures in the film, that in fact, in those first few shots of the film, you're aware that, yes, this is a beautiful atoll here, but hang on, these palm trees are just about, you know, they're not in very good condition. They're worn and battered, and you know, the sea is hitting up against the seawalls, and the seawalls are particularly stable either. So I want to kind of chip away and sort of undermine those romantic conceptions of the Pacific for ordinary Australians.
We even see a time-shifted kind of footage at a couple of points as well, where you see a house that's sort of, you know, sitting, I don't know, like a metre or two above sea level, and then we see at a different time where waves are literally kind of crashing in at the point of a high tide. So you can absolutely see in the film just sort of how quickly, I suppose, inundation and flooding can affect the habitability of certain places. But the film does move around internationally. I mean, there are those shots of Kiribati, and it's very much grounded in Beru and Tarawa, where you headed off to. But we head to Copenhagen. We're in Europe at different times as well, for different meetings and conferences and the like.
The outcomes after Copenhagen conference will directly affect the future of my country and our people. And we call on the global community to take action now.
How did you approach that balancing of the intense focus, I suppose, on one country and one people's, a select few people's experiences with climate change and sea level rise, while also holding in view the broader international context?
Oh, I think it's a really important to have that geopolitical context in relation to what's happening on a, you know, the very individual micro scale. It was interesting. I can always remember the time when we walked into the conference centre, and one of our member of our delegation, Phil Glendenning, walked towards a large globe of the world and looked at the globe and said, "Where's Kiribati? It's not even there." You know, I think the very fact that back then the Pacific didn't really figure in a big way at that conference was actually really tragic in a way. It's I think things have, as Linda was saying, things have changed, and there's much more awareness now than there was before. But back then, Australia pretty much totally ignored the delegation. They didn't advocate for 1.5 degree warming, you know, maximum. It's almost like Australia kind of abandoned the Pacific. I mean, one of the things that drove me to make the film in the first place was, you know, here you have a country like Kiribati, which is like the lowest, makes the lowest contribution to carbon emissions, and yet is the most affected, probably, in the world.
In terms of, like, I'm not sure if you've seen or re-watched The Hungry Tide recently, but I'm wondering if there's anything sort of in particular that stands out to you over the past 10 years that you've noticed that might have, you know, issues that might have become exacerbated, or even areas where you have made some progress on addressing this issue over the past decade since the Hungry Tide came out?
It's been, you know, the more frequency of freak storms, the stronger winds, the weather is here, is everywhere. Before it used to be a pattern. You know, we have the rainy season, we have the dry season. Now it is all confused. It's we have both the dry and the wet right through. That is a big difference that we are seeing. The other one, of course, is that we are having to build higher seawalls, higher and stronger seawalls, because the winds and the currents are getting stronger.
The water, salt water got into there and ruined the crops.
We're just trying to introduce them to mangrove planting at the moment.
It's a peninsula over that side where they are suffering quite severe erosion.
Welcome to our site. This is the Bairiki Manukai seawall site. So what we've done here is designed this seawall for the next 50 years of sea level rise.
We call the sea our cupboard, and what's there now is not as much as we used to experience even 20 years ago. There's more frequency of food poisoning from Cigatera, you know, fish poisoning. That's also a concern. There are many pockets of concerns in the different parts of the country and the different environments that are, causing us to rethink what our future path may be to help us tag along or offer some help to try and reduce those instances.
And gee, the long list of challenges, immense challenges you've just outlined, Linda, just makes me feel like we need so many more documentaries and evidence of these issues and the lived reality of these issues to make people, particularly people in powerful positions, you know, really listen and take some action. Tom, reflecting on this film 11 years on and hearing from Linda about the nature of life and those huge challenges that Kiribati is continuing to endure at the moment, how do you reflect on the role, I suppose, of documentary film and the work that you do in, I suppose, raising awareness or making people much more connected with these issues such as climate change that, you know, whether we like it or not, we are very much implicated in, particularly in the Australian context?
Right now, the documentaries like Kiribati would, because of social media, probably reach out a little bit further, perhaps, than they might have done, say, 10 to 12 years ago. There are organisations in Australia, around the world, that have specifically come about to try and promote films around specific issues, particularly around this issue, but other issues as well. This wasn't around back then. We had television, but we also had, film festivals. We had the more orthodox ways of distribution through DVDs and so on. I think there is a better climate and a better environment now to make these films and get them to reach bigger and bigger audiences. I tend to be optimistic. There are films made more around issues impacting on Australia by itself that, get audiences interested because they're about, your local backyard. But given the increasing awareness of the Pacific in Australia, and this has only come about fairly recently, I think there's room for a lot more documentary work in this area, and it's I'm confident that documentary can contribute to awareness and also to political advocacy. Things are looking good for documentary as a way of bringing things. Issues like this to general attention. It's, documentaries have always been, slightly marginal to other forms of filmmaking, particularly drama. But it's through documentaries that I think people can be, their awareness can be sharpened, and in some way people can be motivated to act, to push things along as much as they can in their own local communities.
The film also shows a delegation of people visiting Kiribati to see the impact of climate change and sea level rise firsthand. Among the visitors are Patrick Dodson, the highly respected Yarrawoo elder, who now is a West Australian senator representing the ALP since 2016. In the film, he meets Kiribati's then-president, Anote Tong, to show support for the country's plight, acknowledging that that has often been lacking from the Australian government. And it's pointed out in the film, too, that it is often First Nations people who have been most sympathetic and receptive to the immense challenges faced by Kiribati and other nations in the Pacific.
Good to see you again. Okay. Well, let me welcome you. I heard you'd come last week.
We've really just come to express our solidarity with you in your fight. We admired the leadership from afar in Copenhagen. We were disappointed and felt with you very much when the other nation state took a different view, and particularly our own country.
I'm wondering from where you sit, Linda, and also thinking about the most recent COP26 summit in Glasgow last year, is there anything you're seeing through, at least, you know, what the Australian government might be saying in talking more about assisting Pacific nations and communities with adapting to climate change, and anything that you take out of the most recent climate summit that gives you hope that some of the huge number of challenges that you've addressed that Kiribati is facing might be taken seriously and see more action on in the years to come?
Earlier on, I spoke about drought and the emergency that was announced by the president. Not long after that, the first people who jumped in and offered their hand was the Australian government. I suppose, looking at the two opposites end, say last year, there was very little in terms of the mention of climate change and all these support. Now it is, neighbours, being, supporting their neighbours, which is, we understand that. We understand that language. Being a part and parcel of not just our Kiribati community, but a wider community at large. In the Pacific, they also have the same issues. And we look at our bigger and stronger partners to support where they can, and especially with climate change, even if they that they give support to some years of concerted reduction of the emissions that they are undergoing, that in itself will be very, very meaningful and will say a lot. It will tell us a lot about the true partnerships that we have with our bigger partners or neighbours in the Pacific.
Yeah. And I'm interested, just to end, I mean, you made this film over a decade ago, Tom. Linda, you played a large role in it as well. Talk about the nature of the friendship that you've developed over that time and to what extent you kind of, have managed to stay in touch, to share what you're up to and what life is like in your respective locations.
We're Facebook friends, Linda, and I keep in touch with you through Facebook largely. So we haven't actually spoken or met for a long time. But I'm always keen to. I told Linda just recently I'm keen to come back to Kiribati and maybe even work with somebody on the ground, a local filmmaker to make another documentary, an update to the Hungry Tide. There's something I think I've left in Kiribati that I feel very close to, very attached to, and I sort of miss it. I miss the people, I miss the island, I miss the culture. I was going to tell you, Linda, that I've archived a lot of material that we shot during the Hungry Tide. I'd love to come over anyway and see you and be there.
That would be good. I'll be here. We'll call that second the updated the second Hungry Tide. In Kiribati we have three tides. First one, not as strong. Second one, stronger, And the third one is the strongest. They can wipe out the land. So second hungry tide will have a really nice connection with the culture. While we were hundreds of miles apart, you know, that spirit of working together for a common good has always driven us. Both John and I have valued Tom's friendship and assistance in the past, and I think it's both ways. If anything, I'd like to do next time on your next visit is contribute to perhaps the storyline and try to offer insights through the eyes of a local that may help. But otherwise, yes, we'll be here, and we look forward to working together too, especially on all the different problems, because as the government puts it, every development aspect has a climate change component to it. And yes, every part and parcel of our daily life and our history, our culture, is going to be touched and impacted by climate change.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm very happy that out of our conversation today, plans are afoot to make The Hungry Tide 2. That's a film that we all absolutely need. So best of luck with that to you both. It's been such a joy and inspiration speaking to you today on Seeing Green. Tom Zariski, Linda Wan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Dylan. Thank you. It was great.
Thank you. Sapota.
Great to see you, Linda. Sapota. We'll be in touch.
I'm glad to see you too. I am Sapomo. Thank you.
Seeing Green is made at Swinburne University of Technology and Monash University and is supported by an Australian Research Council Discovery Grant. Our executive producers are Professor Therese Davis and Associate Professor Belinda Smale. Production and mixing by Britta Jorgensen. Music by Ash Sterling and hosted by me, Dylan Bird. Follow, rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. In the next episode of Seeing Green, we head to Australia's top end to explore how mining is poisoning water and country.
In the Northern Territory's remote Gulf of Carpentaria, Indigenous traditional owners and mining giant Glencore are locked in a battle over the future of one of the world's biggest zinc mines.
That's the McArthur River down there. Blackfella call it Knowing.